bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
You know, the founders, they wrote the Constitution to bind down the government from mischief, said Jefferson. Then they added the Bill of Rights. And you all know what those 10 amendments say. Government shall not, all the way up to the marvelous 10th Amendment that says, if we forgot anything, you can't do that either.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. That was former John Birch Society President John McManus speaking at the 2008 rally for Ron Paul in Minneapolis. McManus, or Jack, as his friends and colleagues know him, passed this week. He was 89 years old. Jack was a devoted man of faith. He was a husband and a father and one of the greatest patriots. He was also the best of Birchers. He joined the Society, which is the parent company of this magazine, in 1966, and he died with his boots on. We're going to dedicate today's show to Jack, an American hero. And I'm joined by my colleagues, Gary Benoit, the editor-in-chief of The New American, and executive senior editor, Steve Bonta. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey.
Yeah, it's somewhat of a hard week for us. Gary, you especially, you were very close to Jack.
Right.
And I want to start out by saying that, you know, Jack was, he started his service to the country as a Marine. And like we said, then he joined the Society. How do you remember Jack?
Well, I joined the Society myself in 1968. And I was a teenager at the time. Jack was older, but I met Jack very soon after I joined. So I knew him as a teenager. And but over the years, we developed a deep friendship. Of course, it started with Jack being my mentor. But we became good friends. And I'm proud to say, for example, that in 1978, when I got married, that Jack was at my wedding.
Yeah.
So that's a memory that I will always cherish. And he's also the godfather for one of my children.
You guys were from the same neck of the woods over there in Massachusetts
at the
time.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. So he did, I mean, he means so much to the Society, not just as a friend, as a colleague, but I mean, here, for instance, and we may go over some of these, we have all these books that were written, and then there's, of course, there's additional books he wrote on his own and whatnot. Let's talk about Jack's legacy as a patriot, what he, you know, his fight for the cause.
I think a good starting point would be to say that most of us through the John Birch Society know Jack because of his tremendous influence.
Mm-hmm.
And all he has done for the organization over so many years. He was on the staff for 50 years. But, of course, there was much more to Jack than simply the tremendous role that he fulfilled as a member and as a staff member of the John Birch Society. He was a family man. He and his wife, Mary, had four children. And, of course, you had mentioned earlier, he also served in the military. He was a Marine Corps officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a great believer in the great human loyalties, loyalty to God, loyalty to family, and loyalty to country.
Yeah.
And he did his duty. He did everything that he could in all those areas. And there's really no more you can do. That's all anyone can do, is to do everything that you can regarding those great loyalties.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the rest is up to God. And Jack was deeply motivated by faith.
Yeah.
And the conspiracy, if we could call it that, but the conspiracy against God and man, Jack fought that conspiracy not only through the John Birch Society, but he also fought that conspiracy that was trying to infiltrate and destroy the Catholic Church that he loved so much.
Yeah. He was the voice of our most popular movie, Overview of America. I've showed that movie.
That's right.
I've showed that movie to my stepdaughter. I've showed it to others. And it's one of those things that is done so well that it seems to resonate with everyone. And
right.
I believe one of the commercials we run, you could hear Jack's voice. I mean, you're right. He's done so much for that. I think you have a clip.
Yeah, so there is a clip I'd love to play. So, Kyle, I think this is
from Overview.
A good time for it. This is from Overview of America, something that is still available on the web.
Yeah.
When our founding fathers decided they'd had enough of British oppression, they broke away and declared independence. They stated as self-evident truth in the Declaration of Independence that men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. In other words, God gave man his rights, and that among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And in the very next sentence, the founders defined the proper role of government when they stated that to secure these rights, governments are instituted. This is the entire philosophical base of our nation. Here, the government cannot legitimately redistribute the wealth, assume power over the people's lives, and dominate man's existence with oppressive taxation, regulations, and controls. According to the founders, government was to be a negative force, which leaves people alone. Its sole function is to protect citizens from one another and from foreign governments, and especially from their own government itself. The founders did not create a government to be a positive force, to do things for people, to take from some, to give to others. They understood that when a government starts doing something for one citizen, it has to take from another to do so. And in the process, it gains control over both.
That's Jack being a teacher, huh?
Well, it's Jack being a teacher, and I would say, in addition, it is vintage Jack McManus. That clip is only 1 minute and 17 seconds long, and yet I would dare say, and I believe I would be accurate in saying, Paul, that to listen to that clip, to listen to that 1 minute and 17 seconds, that you can learn more about fundamental principles. You can learn more about the foundation on which our system of government was built than you would learn going to college for 4 years studying political science. And Jack just had that uncanny ability of taking things that were seemingly complicated, whether they had to do with moral issues, political issues, social issues.
Yeah.
Any issue that we could imagine. And he had the ability to take something that was seemingly complicated and to express it in a way that could be very easily understood, to express it simply and succinctly.
Well, that explains why he was Robert Welch's right-hand man for a long time. He was his communications director. And we have so many pamphlets and little booklets and things going around, and of course, movies that were written and put together by Jack.
Right. And I think it's important, too, to underscore the fact that Jack did talk about fundamental principles. And there's something about principles, don't you think, Paul? Because, for instance, if you're talking about history, you could be talking about particular dates. This happened on this date, that happened on that date. You could talk about different personalities. You could talk about prime ministers or presidents or captains of business and industry and different battles that were fought at different times.
Names and dates.
What does all that mean? And what is the ability of a person to remember all these particulars? But you talk about a timeless principle, such as the fact that rights come from God. That is something that people grasp, and actually it breathes life into the particulars.
Few understood Americanism as well as Jack.
That is absolutely correct. And of course, his knowledge went beyond Americanism, and he did define Americanism, which was expressed in that clip, is the fact that rights come from God, and therefore the purpose of government is to protect those God-given rights.
Right, right. Something that has been lost, unfortunately, on America. But we're going to continue to perpetuate that, and we're going to carry on his legacy, or we're going to carry
on. And one way of doing that, Paul, is to focus on these fundamental principles. And again, the principles are eternal. They don't change with technology. They don't change with time. The principles are timeless. And when people understand these principles, I think their understanding of that principle or those principles are also timeless. You don't forget these principles.
No, and understanding the principles sometimes is just enough, because things get complicated and the world has become a whirlwind of information, disinformation, malinformation, whatever, all these terms they have going around. And sometimes if you don't know necessarily what position to take, if you understand the principle, that should be enough, right, Steve? You haven't said anything. You got 8 seconds.
Absolutely.
You have enough time to say absolutely. I mean, you're gonna have a lot to say later on. But after this, we're gonna have William F. Jasper of the New American join us.
life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
A communist has never been anything but a socialist in a hurry. And when communism is replaced by socialism, there is no reason whatsoever for anyone who loves liberty to raise the victory flag. The leaders throughout Eastern Europe, the leaders in the Soviet Union, what's left of it, the new leader in the Ukraine, the new leaders in the Baltic countries, they're all socialists. But the more complete response to the question of why is the John Birch Society still in business is that whenever we were referring to communism, we always had in mind the modern manifestation of a powerful conspiracy whose megalomaniacal leaders mean to rule the world. To accomplish their diabolical goal, these arch criminals have created and used such economic and political systems as communism, or socialism, or Nazism, or fascism, or a lot of other unsavory isms.
Join us for this segment is New American longtime investigative journalist and friend of Jack's, William F. Jasper. Hey, Bill.
Great to be with you this morning.
So, Bill, few people were as precise and eloquent when it comes to the conspiracy as Jack, huh?
Yeah, Jack had an unparalleled way of communicating, and you know, he was a friend and mentor and colleague for many years, nearly half a century with me. I first came to know Jack through the overview presentation that you discussed in your previous segment, and that was in 1974 when I saw it, and that was at a time, I was a senior in college, and I was in the midst of my socialist detox of the indoctrination that I had received through schooling and the media throughout my lifetime at that point. And I was really thunderstruck by that presentation, because Jack, in a very succinct manner, had distilled and crystallized and articulated these fundamental principles that had escaped me, evaded me during all my years of schooling and college, 5 years of college. And so I agree completely with what Gary said. You can get a whole, take years of college and postgraduate study in political science and economics, and you're in most cases going to be befuddled and confused. And Jack, in that one presentation, helped me sort out a lot of things that had been very jumbled and confused in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, up until very recently, Jack had been doing regular radio shows. He never, like I said in the introduction, he passed with his boots on. He had no intention of ever, packing it up and retiring and playing golf. Or he still lived in Massachusetts, you know, never moved down to Florida to play golf or anything like that. You know, speaking of that presentation, I heard a story. I don't know if you know, and maybe you can enlighten me, but when we made that overview, at least the one that is known now, apparently it was much longer. And I guess it was part of an overview of the world. And when Jack saw the overview of America, he was a little, maybe concern that there were a lot of parts that were taken out. Do you guys know about? Does that sound right?
Well, I know that was taken from a much larger presentation.
Yeah.
And the entire presentation was very good, but the entire presentation was 2.5 hours long.
Yeah. He knew his stuff. Now, Bill, didn't you tell me yesterday that you and Jack were actually involved in a debate regarding the UN? Is that what?
So, and it was in 2002. We were invited by PBS to New York, and we did a debate on the United Nations. Should the United States get out of the United Nations was the title of it. And myself, I was the captain of the team. I had just returned from one of the UN conferences. And Jack was, there were three of us, and then another individual, Tom Skinner, I believe his name was, representing another group, taking the position that we should get out of the United Nations. And then on the other side, we had Shashi Tharoor, who was the spokesman, undersecretary for the United Nations, and one of their main media presences at the time for many years. And then William Lures from the Council on Foreign Relations, and another gentleman, mm-hmm. Bill. They were both Council on Foreign Relations members, globalists.
Wow. So you guys went toe-to-toe with the CFR members, huh?
Yes. And so Jack did a wonderful job there. And more, that was back in 2002. But a couple of years ago, he and I were on remotely from different locations on a national radio video podcast live. And during the podcast, and the topic again was the United Nations. And during the podcast, my audio went mute and I could still see the event, but I got on with the engineer and I said, well, I don't know what happened to my sound. And he said, well, we're going to try to work it out. But Jack didn't miss a beat. Now he was, he was in his upper 80s at that time. He just calmly took over and I was very in deep admiration of his ability, particularly at his age, to his recall and his voice and everything were very, very strong. And he handled it perfectly, better than I would have.
Yeah, and that's obvious in that presentation that at the very beginning we showed from the Ron Paul forum or event there. I mean, that was even after that. I take it the reason he never missed a beat is because he just never stopped working. He never stopped writing. He never stopped thinking. He never stopped talking. I mean, this was his life's mission there. When I came to the society, I came to the communications and it didn't take long before I believe Jack called and we had a short conversation. He gave me his direct line and he said, Paul, if you need anything, just let me know. And there were quite a few times where I would go to him and there was stuff that we've updated that was written by Jack and like we keep saying, it's like, this is a man who worked up until the last moment. What do you think he thought? Do you guys know? I mean, because now I think just before he passed, there were lots of folks and they've been coming out and they've been saying, like, we had Mike Lee, we had Matt Gaetz and others saying we need to get out of the UN. Have any of you heard anything about, you know, Jack's glee or excitement of that people are starting to get it?
No, but he has to be happy now.
Yes. I didn't talk with him recently right before he passed. So I don't know, but I would imagine to the extent that he was still cognizant, he would have been overjoyed at how the persistence that we in the John Birch Society, led by him much of the time, keeping at it all these years is finally paying off. People are seeing what the United Nations truly is and the threat that it does pose to us. And I should mention, too, that in regard to that, you know, one of the things that endeared Jack so much to me is that he was a man of humor. He loved, he was proud of his Irish heritage. But most importantly, in God, family, and country, he put God first. He was a very devout Catholic, unlike Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, or others who claim to be Catholics. I also am a Catholic. And Jack and I, whenever we would be traveling to Washington, D.C. or New York or other parts around the country, he always made it. I knew I could count on him to find out where there was a traditional Latin Mass that we could go to Mass to on Sunday. And we did that every time I can remember that we were together.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks, Bill. Thank you for joining us. After this, Steve is going down memory lane with Jack.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid, and then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?
We see this huge indebtedness. No nation in the history of mankind has ever been as heavily in debt as ours. And our leaders have numerous foreign aid programs where they give away money. What are some of the realities that we face today? Well, it costs more every time I go to the supermarket. Everybody says that. My pay raise doesn't even cover rising costs. Two incomes barely keep pace with rising costs. College tuition is out of sight. Good paying jobs are harder than ever to find. And of course, there's a woeful lack of understanding. There are people who today say, you mean there's no backing for the dollar? And then people say, what is the Federal Reserve and how does it affect me? And then I hear people say, we need the Fed because somebody has to manage the currency. Ladies and gentlemen, that is one of the greatest fallacies of all. If the currency is a commodity, like gold or silver, it does not have to be managed. The free marketplace will manage it. Money should be a commodity valuable to all people, and there's no management needed. And so people who say to me, if you get rid of the Fed, what are you going to replace it with? I say, well, if you have cancer, do you want to replace it with pneumonia and two broken legs?
All right, so that was from Jack's dollars and cents presentation. I believe we still have that going around. And there's Jack again making something that I think is probably one of the most complex topics, money, finance, making that simple. Right, Steve? I know this is something that you keep a top on as far.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jack was a great simplifier. He had that ability. And I mean, just a couple of things I wanted to say to those of our listeners and viewers who might be wondering why the day after the State of the Union address, we're not talking about that like everyone else is. And it's because we on this show sometimes have to make judicious choices about choosing people whose lives really matter in the eternal sense of the word. And Jack was one of those people. We define greatness a little bit differently than the way the world defines it. I mean, it was mentioned earlier that that nominally, at least, President Joe Biden and his former, you know, wingman Nancy Pelosi both profess the same religion as Jack McManus. But in terms of their moral conduct, without going into specifics, they're worlds apart. I mean, Jack was a man among many other things. I mean, one of the things that I admired most about him was his unimpeachable moral conduct. He was married to one woman his entire life. He was faithful to her. He was decent. He consistently had the ability to rise above the sordidness of the world we live in. In fact, I remember one time we were talking about popular culture, and I think specifically the proliferation of pornography on the internet and what a problem this was. I think we just run an article on it, The New American, or something to that effect. But anyway, and Jack sort of said gently, you know, He said, I've just never had anything to do with pornography. In fact, I've never even owned a pornograph. And and that was sort of one of his ways of making light of a very serious topic. But it also speaks, I think, to the fundamental decency and character of the man. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in so many ways, he emblemized the sort of person that we Birchers and those, you know, in the larger penumbra of the movement that we lead ought to aspire to be. Okay, not only well informed, but also good character, you know, of unimpeachable character. Because we've seen again and again how people who perhaps maybe even right-minded in one way or another, you know, but because of character deficiencies, they get dragged down and really aren't of much use to the freedom movement. So Jack McManus was just the very paragon, I think, of what a Bircher ought to be. And I should also say, you know, the reason we're devoting an entire program to him is that for decades, he was the face of our organization. He was the guy. He was on C-SPAN at least a time or two. You know, we played the opening clip of him appearing at a very large Ron Paul-related convention in Minneapolis. He was well-known, well-respected, admired, even outside our circle. The rest of us, we tend to be, you know, we know one another and that kind of thing. But he really was a man who had that ability to reach out and was well-connected and I think almost universally admired. So just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
As far as care. Now, my personal friendship with Jax is not as long as Bill's or Gary's, but I first met him in the 1990s when I was also a college student. I was a graduate student, and I'd already been studying some Birch materials, but I couldn't quite get my mind around the conspiracy thing. That was a stumbling block for me. Mm-hmm. And he came, at the time I was living in Provo, Utah, working on a master's degree, and he came to town. I think it was he gave a presentation. The long version, I think it was Overview of Our World in Point of Fact. It was a couple hours long, very detailed, at the local high school auditorium. And I got tickets, went there. A lot of the people, a lot of the, you know, the top Utah Patriots, Reed Benson and people like that were in attendance at that time. But I was just riveted by when he got around to the topic of conspiracy. I remember thinking, here's the rub. Let's see what he has to say about that. And he started talking about Carol Quigley and quoting stuff from a book I'd never heard of, Tragedy and Hope, and my ears pricked up. And the very next day, I rushed over to the BYU University Library, found the book on the shelf, took it home, started digging through it. Lo and behold, there it was. Oh, and I remember turning to my wife and saying, wow, you know, that stuff that about conspiracy, there's obviously something to it. And shortly after that, I joined the society. And then he and I became good friends.
So we have Jack to thank for Steve Bonta here, see?
Well, yeah, and this is the thing. I mean, Jack was not just a talented speaker and a talented writer. I should mention in front of you, we have his whole literary output there. I mean, he published a bunch of books. Let's see if you can hold them up. Yeah, so Changing Commands, that book was a warning about the perils of the UN military. Let's see, this one here, his most recent major book was about William F. Buckley, Pied Piper for the Establishment, really demolished the whole idea that Buckley is this wonderful conservative leader and so forth. What else do we have? Okay, so this is the last of several editions of a book listing whom we used to call the insiders, kind of corresponds to what people call the deep state nowadays.
Yeah, the conspiracy,
Listed by presidential administration. Financial terrorism. I remember when that came out in the late 90s.
Hey, look at this.
Dollars and Cents, which is a pamphlet form of the speech we just saw an excerpt of. And finally, probably the least known, but maybe from a scholarly point of view, the most important. This is his history of the John Birch Society.
I actually read this when I was in comms. I used it as a reference.
So Jack clearly had scholarly bona fides. He was extreme. And he, of course, published, McGarry? Surely hundreds of articles in New American and its predecessor publications.
Newspapers.
He was an incredibly prolific writer and a good writer.
He was,
But in addition to that, he was, as we mentioned, a great communicator. And then beyond that, he was something that I really struggled with, which is he was an activist. He was a person that knew that was just on fire to reach out to people, probably, you know, his military background. And then also, I another thing to point out is he was no effete, you know, mincing Mandarin type. He wasn't just a theoretician. He was a man's man in every sense of the word. He had a lot of guts.
Yeah.
He was very... he was exceedingly kind, but if you needed to be told off, he could do that too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was the full package. He was what I think the
the Jews like to call a mensch.
Yeah.
You know, that's really, and he came, comes originally from Brooklyn, so he would have appreciated that term.
Yeah, the story he tells me about is, you know, he set out to destroy the John Birch Society, and that's how he ran into us. Because he heard about us and he's like,
kind of like Saul of Tarsus, right?
Yeah,
he heard about us through what we met Buckley.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, exactly.
And then he wrote the book Exposing Buckley once he became informed. Of course, like, many years later, but it's interesting that he investigated the John Birch Society himself and found out that he had been lied to.
Yeah. It's kind of like similar, not exactly, but somewhat similar to yours, Steve, because you were sent down a path. And
well, I can only hope. To aspire to become a fraction of the man that Jack McManus was. He was a dear personal friend as well. He kept up with me. The last time I saw him was several years ago in New Mexico. He gave a presentation there. Obviously, I didn't know him as well or as intimately as Gary did, but nevertheless, he was a dear personal friend. I miss him greatly, but I'm privileged to have known him personally for all of those years because he's one of those people you look at and say, yeah, that's the kind of person I need to be. That's why we've dedicated the show to him, because in him was the true measure of human greatness, in my opinion.
Yes, the person who birched me was actually birched by him. And then when I called back to him, he's like, did you get to meet Jack McManus? I was like, I have. We're going to be right back, and we're going to have Bill Hahn, and he's going to join us.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame. The new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code N20, END20.
Beginning at the time of the bicentennial of our great nation, a movement was launched to revise the Constitution through a constitutional convention. The promoters of this scheme knew very well that once convened, a con-con could not be limited. They also knew that with a con-con, they could destroy what we have and lead us into a dictatorship. There's a professor named James McGregor Burns, and he actually stated, Let us face reality. The framers of the Constitution have simply been too shrewd for us. If we are to turn the founders upside down, to put together what they put asunder, we must directly confront the constitutional structure they erected. He actually said that, right? McGregor Burns and his allies sought to have a con-con by the year 1987, the 200th anniversary of the Constitution. 32 state legislatures had already called for a convention. Only two more were needed, and there would have been a constitutional convention. So let me do a little bragging here. The John Birch Society sprang into action. Our members persuaded state legislators in several states not to call for a con-con. Then we persuaded state legislators in other states to rescind their calls. We did it with the New American Magazine, with the organized efforts of John Birch Society members, with visits to state legislators, with speeches and media appearances, and we saved the Constitution.
That was Jack McManus discussing one of the society's most important battles and victories, stopping an Article 5 convention. And joining me is Bill Hahn, the CEO of JBS. Bill, We were so close, weren't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, as Jack mentioned, we were within two states. And yet, you know, it was the John Birch Society that, as he said, swung into action, you know, and gave the issue legs to actually stop states from applying for, you know, that convention through through Congress.
Yeah, we had the foreknowledge and the vision to see this was going to be a problem. This was going to be a threat. Two states away, like we said.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know, and so, and as Jack would, you know, would agree, I mean, it was all due to, you know, organization, getting into the grassroots, educating those folks on the dangers of the convention, and really what that tool is meant to do. You know, it is for, you know, fixing deficiencies in the Constitution. But yet, what deficiencies are there that the founders gave us? You know, we contend that the Constitution is just not obeyed. If it were followed, and Jack has said this many times throughout the years, that if it were followed, the federal government would be 80% gone, you know, size, scope, and cost.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's a...
That alone would solve a lot of problems,
yes,
including a deficit problem.
Well, we would have a surplus problem, wouldn't we? You
know? I don't see that as a problem.
definitely get rid of the debt, yeah.
Yeah, and that was at the Ron Paul...
That it was, yeah. And, you know, as we were talking, you know, off camera, I mean, that I was there.
Yeah.
So that was 2008. I had been with the society just over a year.
How many people, you think those folks knew about the problems of a con there?
You know, what was interesting is that I was in charge of the booth there. Okay. And so when Jack gave that speech, I wasn't able to see that, but I did run to the door and take a, you know, and peek my head through it just to catch the optics of it, you know, because this, again, you know, conference center was a huge place and, it was estimated to have between, say, 11 and like 14,000 people. And Jack told me afterwards that this was the largest audience that a representative of the society had ever spoken in front of.
Mm.
Yes. And so he was very excited, you know, to
really?
Give that.
Really? Because Robert Welch had spoken at UCLA in the 60s and 70s and things like that. That's okay. That's cool.
Yes. And so that, so it was really interesting. And so there was a camera operator that was in the media section of that, and it's on our video that we have. It's called The Surge. It's from 2008. And when Jack mentions the motto of the society, there was a bunch of folks within that media area that actually helped finish him saying that motto, less government, more responsibility, with God's help, a better world.
Yeah.
So when you ask the question, you know, do you think that some of those folks, or most of those folks, or how many of those folks would have known about, you know, the Constitutional Convention? I would bet that those folks were very educated on that issue.
That's your Ron Paul crowd, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and they, I mean, there were a lot of Birchers that were, you know, in that movement. And, you know, we had helped them, you know, get up to date on the issues, to, you know, where to avoid, you know, certain pitfalls when it comes to organization. And the Campaign for Liberty is actually, you know, still a friend, you know, to the John Birch Society.
I mean, Ron Paul's stances, I was a big Ron Paul fan, and I was introduced to these ideas, that these Birch ideas, through Ron Paul. But I mean, it seems like he took a lot of his stances right out of the JBS New American Playbook.
Well, and Dr. Paul served in Congress with another Dr. No, as they used to call them, and that was, you know, Dr. Larry McDonald.
Yeah.
And they, you know, would compare notes, and there was some, you know, back and forth, you know, between communication, going back and forth, but, you know, between them in regards to, you know, really getting back into Congress. Ron,
back to the Constitution.
Well, if the story goes correctly, Dr. Ron Paul had gotten out of Congress and then wanted to get back into it, and was talking with Dr. McDonald, you know, who's congressman, Democrat congressman out of Georgia. And Ron Paul asked his advice in regards to, well, which, you know, party do I go with? Because, you know, Larry McDonald's was really, you know, conservative. One of the most was the most conservative in the Congress, but he was a Democrat.
Yeah.
You know, and he basically said, well, whichever one do you think you can win with, you know? And so Dr. Ron Paul ended up being, you know, obviously a Republican. But I know that Jack had, you know, was very close, you know, with, you know, Larry McDonald. He knew, you know, and, had good conversations with, you know, Dr. Ron Paul.
Yeah.
And as if you were to watch that in his entire speech, there is a part in there at the very beginning, where Dr. Ron Paul had given, the society a recommendation, because as Jack mentioned in that speech, a month later, we were having our 50th anniversary in Appleton. And, so Dr. Ron Paul had written up a recommendation and Jack actually read it then from that.
Yeah.
He read it from the podium.
At that event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So where are we going? The society, I mean, we've lost an icon in the society, but obviously we're going strong and whatnot. With a minute and 40 seconds left, where are we heading?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the society is no stranger to, you know, having a very large figurehead, you know, pass away. Mr. McManus was around when Mr. Welch passed away.
He was his right-hand man, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, Jack had told me over the years, you know, that, you know, we get back to principles. And, you know, Jack mentioned, too, that the John Birch Society was set up by Robert Welch to last for generations. You know, the need for the John Birch Society is so great. That, you know, there will never not be a time that the John Birch Society will not be around or needed. So it's very important, you know, that we follow the examples of these gentlemen that were you know, larger than life for you know, most of the membership. I think every single member of the John Birch Society owes a heavy debt of gratitude to obviously Mr. Robert Welch and you know, and John F. McManus. And the foundation that we stand on today was largely built by their efforts.
It was laid by these guys.
Absolutely.
But we're gonna continue forward, and
yep.
I believe the future's brighter than it's ever been.
I have to agree. They're you know, and it all depends.
It may seem weird to say that now.
Well, it all depends too on the member activity, right?
And so you,
Jack, would say, get out there.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the New American Daily. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you Monday.